You're listening to the Outdoor Photography Podcast, episode 75. Today, we're sitting down with wildlife photographer Colleen Guerra from Alberta, Canada, to chat about how to safely connect with wildlife subjects so that you can best capture their personalities, the critical role of predators in maintaining a healthy ecosystem, memorable moments with wildlife, and a whole lot more. So, stay tuned. Hi, I'm Brenda Petrella, the creator of Outdoor Photography School. Join me as I sit down with top landscape and nature photographers and outdoor industry experts to chat about creativity, composition, photography tips and techniques, essential gear, safety in the outdoors, respect for nature, and so much more. Tune in every week to learn how to create compelling and impactful images while exploring and enjoying the natural world. Welcome to the Outdoor Photography Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by the Outdoor Photography School Digest, which is the newsletter that I send out on the last Friday of the month that contains a summary of all new OPS content and additional tips and resources that will help you on your photography journey, whether that's through OPS or from other resources like from some of our guests on this show. I also highlight a photographer whose work I think you would enjoy learning about, regardless of whether they are a professional photographer. And I share any outdoor photography-related offers that may be of value. I call the OPS Digest your monthly dose of outdoor photography information and inspiration. And if that sounds like something you would enjoy reading, you can sign up for free through the link in the show notes. Hello, my friends. Brenda Petrella here, to help you create better images and reconnect with nature. And happy September. For those of you with kiddos at home, I hope the transition back to school is going well. Today, I'm really excited to introduce you to our guest, Colleen Guerra. I've been following Colleen's wildlife photography on Instagram for a while now, and I really appreciate not only how she's able to portray the animals and birds photographically, but also the story behind the images that she provides in the description. So before we roll the interview, let me give you a little background on Colleen. Colleen Guerra is a wildlife photographer, writer, and educator based in Calgary, Alberta, in Canada. Her focus is on Canadian wildlife, and her subjects include grizzly and black bears, wolves, lynx, swift and red fox, moose, elk, and more. She is passionate about photographing animals in their natural surroundings, from the Rocky Mountains to the prairies. Colleen's hope is that her images will help foster a connection between the viewer and her wild subjects, raising awareness to protect both the animals and their natural habitats. She strongly believes in ethical photography practices, and all of her images are of wild animals only. None are captivated or baited. Colleen's photographs have been featured in publications worldwide, including Audubon, Photo Life, Canadian Geographic, Wild Planet Photo, and Nature's Best. She is also a contributing writer for Nature TTL and is a workshop leader with Offbeat Photography. And so without further ado, please enjoy my wide-ranging conversation with Colleen Guerra. Colleen, welcome to the Outdoor Photography Podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. It's really great to get to know you.
Hi, Brenda. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, so I've already given the listeners your brief bio in the introduction, but I always like to give our guests the opportunity to tell us a little bit more about their origin story. And I understand that you grew up in a family that was pretty outdoorsy and connecting with nature even as a little kid. So I'm wondering, how did you get interested in wildlife photography?
I did grow up with a family that was really outdoorsy. We live in Calgary, Alberta, so I'm about an hour away from the Rocky Mountains. So that was a big part of my childhood, was sort of exploring that area, both camping, tent camping, and then we upgraded to a small little trailer. Spent a lot of weekends out camping and, yeah, family trips that way, and then hiking as well. So I definitely grew up being in the outdoors and just really loving and connecting to nature and to wildlife. We'd see a lot of wildlife on our trips. And then the photography portion of it, both of my parents were pretty interested in photography, my mom especially. So when I was a kid, my mom would always be the person with her camera out, you know, at the family gatherings or any trips. And, you know, as a kid, I'd always be like, oh, another picture. But now as an adult myself with my own camera, I'm like, oh, I totally understand why, right? You want to capture those moments. So yeah, my mom was a really big inspiration in the photography aspect. And so I had my own camera, just a little point and shoot sort of growing up. And, you know, I would just take snaps of our trips and travels. And then as I got a bit older, I continued having a camera with me, but it would mostly be for, you know, any trips I would take, and it'd just be kind of snapshots of my travels. And I didn't really get into wildlife photography, specifically until kind of later in life. And I attended a conference just here in Calgary, put on by a professional wildlife photographer, John Marriott. I don't know if you know of him, but he's a prolific kind of Canadian wildlife photographer. And so I just attended one of his conferences, and it's something just clicked. Like I was like, oh, like I can combine, you know, both of these loves for nature, wildlife, with my interest in photography. So I just became a lot more serious about it then, and upgraded my gear, got sort of more of a professional DSLR camera. And then I just started going out all of the time. Just any spare moment I had, I just would start getting out more and more and photographing all sorts of different wildlife. And then it's now taken over quite a bit of my life and become, you know, a side profession. And I love it. I just hadn't realized before that, you know, you could actually do that as a profession. It just hadn't crossed my mind until that point. So.
Right. Yeah. And so did your mom teach you the sort of the basics of photography, or how did you start teaching yourself just the techniques of photography?
Yeah. So I'd say my mom is still, you know, more of a hobbyist. She still shoots quite a bit on just automatic mode and everything, but she has a really great eye. She always has had a really great eye for composition. That's, I think, more of her focus. She can just go out into any place and grab a beautiful photo, even without knowing how to use all the different settings. She has a basic understanding for sure, but I find now I'm trying to teach her now later in life, but she just always had it with her, always had that artistic eye. She was always out in nature. That my mom is never in the house if she can help it. She's just always outdoors. Yeah. So she mostly learned, just by having the camera with her and then just shooting on those automatic modes. So for myself to learn the sort of technical side of photography, I just, I went to a couple workshops early on, which I found really helped. So just learning both from the instructors and then from the people that were also there, just, you know, chatting about photography, seeing how they were shooting. You know, if you go out into a setting, I find people are doing completely different things. You think everyone's taking the same shot, you know, but everyone's doing their own thing. So just being able to watch other people and then just experimenting with my own camera. I would just go out, practice, try different things, and then online as well. So just YouTube videos, reading articles, you know, getting magazines about photography. Like once I had discovered wildlife photography and started getting more interested in it, I just started reading and listening to everything I could get my hands on, basically.
Yeah. And so did you ever do just landscapes first and then wildlife, or were you always knew from that first conference that you went to that you really wanted to focus in on the wildlife aspects?
Yeah. So that conference that I went to definitely made me realize that wildlife was what I wanted to focus on. And I'd always loved animals growing up as a kid. Like I had posters of animals all over my room. I had books on animals. Like it was a real main focus of mine. So I knew I wanted to pursue wildlife photography, but actually I didn't initially take a wildlife photo workshop. I ended up taking one that was mostly landscape based. And I can't exactly remember why I did that. I think I was just interested in learning about photography in general. And maybe I hadn't seen too many wildlife focused ones. So I just decided to take one that was local and landscape based. And then I took another one that was portrait based, which was totally kind of left field for me, but I just wanted to get a general understanding of what I liked. And so I took those, and then I did like them. Like I did enjoy them. I learned a lot. I do like shooting landscapes. And I started getting into actually photographing people initially. That was sort of how I got into photography. I was photographing my friends were getting married and getting engaged and having babies. So I was photographing them actually quite a bit at the beginning. And then I also volunteered with an animal shelter here in Calgary and sort of photographing animals at the shelter. And the idea was to get better photographs for the website so then they get adopted quicker. So I started doing those things. But I was always drawn to wildlife. Like as soon as I would get out shooting for myself, I'd find that I was always trying to photograph wildlife. And I would even be going, like say I was in my car driving out to the mountains, I'd be passing these beautiful landscapes and beautiful light and I just wouldn't stop. I'd just be trying to look for wildlife or getting out on a hike to find some wildlife. So, and even now, like I would say, like 85-90% of my shooting is wildlife based. It's just my passion and it's what I love to do the most.
So those experiences of doing portraits of people and some landscape work early on, how has that translated into your wildlife photography? Like, were there any skill sets that you learned from photographing people that you can apply to photographing animals as well?
I think so, definitely. I think if you look at wildlife photography more in the sense of when you're taking those sort of close-up portraits of animals, it's almost the same as photographing a person, I would say, or you're looking for the same things. So you're trying to capture maybe the personality of the animal. So I would try and do that in my people photos, you know, capture those moments of interaction between families or capture a certain character in that person's face. And I find I'm trying to do that as well in my wildlife photography is I try to take the photos that way, or also kind of when I'm reviewing my photos after the fact, trying and selecting those photos of the animal that to me shows most of their personality, or you really see something in their eyes that's kind of speaking out about, you know, you can relate to the animal. And I find that's what you want in your portraits of people as well, right? You would just want to have their personality sort of shine through. So that kind of thing. And the techniques as well, you know, just trying to maybe get using those wider apertures, blurring out the background. I did that a lot in my when I was photographing families and people. And I try and do that as well with my wildlife photos, just so more of the focus is on the subject itself and not so much about the background. It's not always the case, but I do like those types of photos where then you're just focused on the animal and the beauty of that animal. So,
yeah. Well, I really do love how you are able to capture the personality of the animals in your wildlife photographs. They're just stunning. And they, you know, you're not just recording animal behavior or what they're doing in their environment, but like you said, you really are capturing that essence of their personality. And it really comes through in your photographs. And so I'm curious, when you're out in the field and you're trying to connect with an animal and get to know it better, how are you able to do that while also balancing, you know, not disturbing the animal?
Yeah. Well, thanks, Brenda. Yeah. Thanks for saying that about my work. That's really nice. So I guess I try to first, I guess the best thing to do is knowing more about the animal. So I try, and before I even set out to find an animal, I try and read or learn as much about them as I can so that I'm most prepared in the field. So I think that's really important because then you can recognize, you know, like you said, you don't want to disturb the animal. So then you're able to recognize those signs of maybe frustration or distress in the animal. And then you're able to leave immediately or back away. And that really puts the animal at ease if you know those signs and you're respectful of them. And then they're able to just continue on what they're doing, their daily lives, and you're able to capture them that way and show their personality and character that way because they're just feeling comfortable with you in their presence. You know, I try and stay as quiet and sort of hidden away a lot of the time as possible, but most often the animal will know you that you're there. They have way better senses than us, right? So they do have some awareness a lot of the time that you are there. But as long as I just try and stay, as quiet as possible, I don't make any sort of sudden movements. I try and spend as much time as I can with the animal just so then they're just a bit accustomed to you being around, and they're continuing on in their natural behavior. So I just try to stay you know, respectful distance away. I'd say quiet, know the signs of behavior. Those are probably top three. And then, yeah, having a lot of patience. So, you know, that's just waiting for that special moment where you're not photographing the whole time necessarily. You're just waiting for that special moment when maybe they do glance in your direction, or they're just doing something that you specifically want to capture. It's just waiting for those special moments.
Yeah. So are you camouflaged mostly, or somehow, like, are you trying to mask your presence other than distance and respectful, you know, respecting their behavior? Are you trying to, you know, blend in as much as possible as well so that they aren't aware of your presence at all? So you're maybe in a blind or camouflaged, or like, do you cover your camera gear with like a lens coat kind of thing?
Yep. So all those things, I'd say generally, yes. My idea is to keep physically distant and then use a telephoto lens. So I use, you know, telephoto lenses for a lot of my work. So those are those things. But then, yeah, I'm always, when I'm heading out into the field, I dress not necessarily always in camo. It will depend sort of the location that I'm going to or the animal that I'm photographing, but I'll dress in very muted tones, nothing ever bright. So I can blend in that way. I always wear a hat, try and cover my face a little bit. And then, yeah, I have lens coat, coverings on my lenses. And then I also have a couple of blinds that I'll use in different situations. So if I'm photographing, in the national parks, for example, I don't use those because they're not allowed. So then I would just be in my, you know, kind of darker clothing, staying a distance away, trying to maybe hide myself, you know, behind trees or things like that to stay as hidden as possible. But in other areas where blinds are allowed, I do have like a full kind of tent pop-up blind that I'll use. And then I also have one of the lens covers. So it's camo material, and it's just sort of like a big sheet that I'll put over myself, and it's specifically made for shooting. So you have that area where you're able to still see out. There's a hole for your camera lens to pop out of, and that is great. Like, I find it so versatile and it's so easy. You just toss it over yourself. It's really easy to sort of pack in on hikes and that kind of thing. So I'll use that. And especially if I'm, say, around a den, I'll use those quite a bit. Like, I was photographing a fox den this past spring, and that's what I would use, and just stayed completely hidden. Like, they didn't even really know I was there, which is amazing. So
that is amazing.
Try and stay as blended into the environment as possible, for sure.
Yeah. It's amazing how quickly they can notice any movement. So I was just thinking about earlier this summer, I was on a hike and I wasn't anticipating encountering any wildlife, but I was in a very remote area, and but I was, you know, looking for just small scenes in the forest and that sort of thing. So my camera was in my backpack, and I had on a 24-70, thinking that that was going to be the first thing that I was going to use. And as I was coming up this trail, ahead of me, facing away from me, was a fox eating something. And so I was like, oh my goodness, like this is a chance. You know, I was so excited because I don't do wildlife photography, but I have these chance encounters sometimes, you know. So I very quietly, I was so grateful that the fox was facing away from me, so she didn't seem to notice my presence. And I was able to quietly put on my telephoto lens and get a couple of images of her as she was walking towards me. And it was amazing that she was walking right towards me. And I was like, I can't believe that she is doing that. Like, she seemed like she was knew I was there, but was still walking towards me. But then I went to change. I was on auto focus and I wanted to switch to manual focus, and just moving my hand to click, you know, click that little button on the side of the lens. And as soon as I did that, she was gone. And, I was like, oh, you know, I wish I had my settings set in a way, because I didn't have it on continuous autofocus or anything like that. I wasn't tracking eye tracking or anything like that. So I couldn't, my autofocus wasn't keeping up. And that's why I wanted to switch to manual. So when you're in a situation like that, when you need to switch lenses or change your battery, or do you have any tips for how to not frighten the animal?
Oh, I don't know. Like, yeah, honestly, just try your very best to do it as quietly as possible. I know that's not like the best advice. I don't really have much. I try and always, as best as I can, like, pre-plan my settings on my camera. Like you were saying, that's a really good point. But you're photographing mostly landscapes. You wouldn't think that way, right? You're having these chance encounters. So you have to do it really quickly. Whereas for me, I'm mostly going out for wildlife. So I'll set my settings as I think I need them right away and then don't have to change them as much. I also have my camera on silent shooting mode. So for those people that have cameras with that setting, I do find that can help sometimes. And you're not having, your camera making all these sounds that might attract the animal and make them look in your direction, make notice that you're there. And then, just kind of trying not to, zip your bag open as much as possible. Just have everything sort of on you, ready to go. It's a really good point. Like even just the smallest movements, right? So you just have to try your best to sit completely still and not make any sort of sudden movements, or wait for a time when the animal is maybe not looking in your direction. And that's when you would quickly, change your settings or move if you have to. And then just freeze again once they kind of turn and look in your direction again. But and some animals are more used to people. It depends on, the area that you're visiting. Like maybe in provincial parks or national parks, some animals are just more used to seeing people around. So then you don't have to be as cognizant of if you're making a little bit of noise. But that's always important, I think, just to keep them acting naturally and keep them doing the activity that you first saw them doing when you arrived. You want them doing that when you leave, basically. So just being as quiet and respectful as possible. It's always a good thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are some safety considerations that you take? Like I imagine when you're in bear country, you have bear spray or something like that, or you may be required to have a guide with you. When you're doing other types of wildlife, say like wolves and foxes and coyotes and lynx and bobcat, like all these amazing animals that you photograph, are there other types of safety considerations that you're taking?
Not really. I'd say definitely for the bears, I do have bear spray. So I always have two cans of bear spray with me whenever I'm going into the woods. I always have one sort of strapped on the outside of me. I have what's called a scat belt. I don't know if you've heard of those before.
No.
But they're just a belt that you snap on. And so the bear spray is right there. I see a lot of people hiking with their bear spray in their backpack. And I just think, you should never do that because you'll never have the chance. You know, if you come around a corner and there might be a bear, you surprise each other, it's just going to happen in a matter of seconds, right? So you just want to have it in a place where you know where it is, the same place all of the time. So I always have it in the same exact area. So I've trained myself to be able to, reach for it. I've practiced with my bear spray before, which I think is another really important thing to do. But yeah, so I always have bear spray with me. And I think that is an important tool that could help with quite a few animals. If you're ever to get into a situation, I think bear spray is probably the best one to have. And that's really all that I have with me. I've never had a negative encounter really with any wildlife, and I don't carry anything else to protect myself against the wildlife, just the bear spray. As another safety thing, I guess, just for myself, just because I'm usually on my own, and I can get into some remote areas, I do have an InReach with me. So that's my other sort of, I guess I'd say, safety gear. And that's just a tool that I can communicate back with my family and with my husband. If I'm going to be late or something, I just shoot off a quick text on that. And then if I would ever get into a serious accident or I need help, there's an SOS button that you can press and you'll come get rescued. So I always have that with me no matter where I'm going. I think those are my two things, the bear spray and the InReach for sure.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've had some people comment like, are you afraid to hike alone, when you're going into the backcountry or into a remote area because of being afraid of wildlife? And like you, I've thankfully not had any bad wildlife encounters. I've never had an animal appear upset or aggressive towards me. And I know it can happen, but usually if you're mindful of your impact on them and that they're more likely to be afraid of you. And if they're going to be aggressive, it's a defense mechanism that they're doing. They're not just out to attack you, but people who are not familiar with that tend to be very fearful when they go out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, same. Like the amount of times I've been, around bears, around wolves, and just nothing ever has happened. There's been times maybe where you're getting a sense just your, you might be a little bit too close or, you know, and but then you just back off and everything is fine. That's happened maybe a couple of times, but they will give you a sign there. And you're exactly right. They're not just going to, most of the time, like just attack you for no reason. There's always a reason, or it's usually when there's, say, a dangerous situation with a bear, for example, it's usually because of a surprise encounter, mm-hmm. right? You're not making enough noise when you're hiking, you come around a corner, there's a bear, something like that. It's not the case that, bears are out kind of following you around in the woods trying to eat you. And a lot of people have that sense. And same with wolves. A lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about what wolves are like. And all of my encounters with wolves have been incredible and just the complete opposite of what people think. I think, the more time people spend in nature, the more you read about the biology of animals and what they're really doing out there, I think you feel more comfortable and then you're not as nervous sort of getting out there into the outdoors.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. When you are going out there, if you were just hiking, one of the safety tips is to make as much noise as possible so that you have like a bear bell or you're whistling or singing or saying, hey bear, to kind of alert them to your presence. But when you want to photograph them, you don't necessarily want them to go away. So do you still try to make a lot of noise when you're just, say, going from point A to point B, or are you actively trying to track them and find them and be more hidden?
Yeah. So are you asking specifically about bears or wildlife in general?
Wildlife in general, just in terms of if I was just hiking for the sake of hiking, going on a hike, then I would make noise and, but if I am carrying a camera and I really want to get a wildlife photograph, then I would try to make the least amount of noise as possible so that I had more chances of finding them. But then that kind of is a catch-22 safety situation.
Yeah. No, exactly. No, that's a good point. So in general with wildlife, it will depend on the area that I'm in and what type of wildlife will be in that area. So I'm always thinking generally about bears because I don't actively try and photograph them on foot. Really, I'd say the majority of when I see bears is from a distance, maybe on a hike or from my car, I'll photograph them. So I will still make noise that way. So if I'm in an area where I think there's a lot of bears or at the time of year, certain times of year, bears will be more around the hiking trails. Like now is actually a really good time because the berries are, exploding and they're eating the berries. And so they're so focused on that. And a lot of the berry growth will be along these populated hiking trails. So at times of the year like this, I will still make a lot of noise. I don't want to get a photo at the expense of the animal. And I feel like if I wasn't making noise and I were to surprise a bear, I just think that would be a really bad encounter. And, something could happen to me as well. But I just usually in those situations, the animal will lose, right? Like if it attacks a person, often it will get put down and things like that. So I don't ever want to surprise a bear. So I still will make a lot of noise while hiking. And then if I get an opportunity on foot, say there's a bear, down a valley, I can still get some shots that way. But at least I know where the bear is. It's not that surprise encounter that you might have if you weren't making any noise. And then for other wildlife, say at different times of year, like when I'm snowshoeing or something like that, and the bears are in hibernation, I will be a little bit more quiet because I'm not as nervous about running into one or not wanting to surprise a bear. So then, say if I'm looking for like Canada lynx or something like that, I'll just be pretty quiet in the woods because I won't need to worry too much about, surprising a lynx or anything like that. And then I'll tend to be a bit more quiet. Same thing when, photographing foxes in an area that I don't have to worry too much about bears, then I'm generally more quiet and sort of doing that kind of sneaky hiding type of behavior versus making that a lot of noise. Yeah.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So when you are doing your photography in the winter, winters in Calgary, I imagine are a good chunk of the year, or at least the cold temperatures.
Like 8 months, 8 months of the year.
Yeah, exactly. So from like a practical standpoint, if you're hiking in, you're snowshoeing in, you're exerting a lot of energy, and then you may sit for several hours, either observing an animal or slowly tracking an animal and that sort of thing. How are you managing temperature control? Like how are you staying warm while, you know, like around here, I'm in Vermont, and so we also have long winters, but typically the strategy is layering as much as possible. So don't ever get yourself overheated, you know, but have an insulation layer for when you stop hiking. And so are you doing that type of a technique as well? And so you're sort of stripping layers and putting extra layers on as you're going from point A to point B and that sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly. I'd say I'm pretty much the same as you, Brenda. I'd say I try and layer up, you know, to a level of comfort. But I know that as soon as I start snowshoeing or hiking in the winter, I warm up quite quickly. So I'm always aware that I just might start off with a few lighter layers and be a little bit more cool as I'm sort of heading out. Then I start warming up, or else I'm just, if I don't do that and I wear too many layers, then I'm just kind of stripping them off right away, right? Because you're packing right. A lot of gear. Like a lot of the time, you know, I'll have all my lenses, all my cameras with me, then you're actually snowshoeing as well. So you have quite a big pack. So start off with some light layers, like always long underwear. Yeah. Some sort of protective like rain or snow pant over top. And then I'll pack in my bag some extra layers. So, you know, maybe that will be, you know, an extra long sleeve shirt or extra puff jacket, that kind of thing. And then some extra mittens. I always carry an extra set of mittens with me and an extra pair of socks, because I find, you know, my feet are usually the first thing to get wet, and there's nothing worse than having cold feet. So I always pack an extra pair for sure. And then I bring to keep warm too are those the hand warmers. I always carry a few packs of those as well in my camera bag. And I find those work really, really well. You know, if my hands start to freeze up or something, I'll just pop one of those in my mitts and then that gets your hands kind of moving again and get that circulation back. And you can also put them in your boots as well. So I have those.
Yeah, I love them.
Do you use them too? Yeah, they're great.
I do. I mean, part of me feels guilty because I feel like it's a source of waste. You know, it's like this one-time use kind of thing. But like, they've saved me so many times, and they're lightweight. And sometimes what I'll do is I'll keep them in my pockets, because especially if I am just wearing like glove liners or something like that, so that I can manipulate my camera, you know, change settings and all that, then I don't want to have heavy gloves on for that. And so then, but my hands will freeze really quickly. So then I stick them back in my pockets and I can just hold the warmers. And they help a lot. Yeah.
They're really good too for if you're out in really, really cold temperatures where your batteries will drain a lot quicker. A couple of times I've wrapped my battery around them when I'm not using them in my gloves, and then keeps the batteries a little bit warmer, keeping them lasting a bit longer. But I have the same feeling. I do feel bad about using them as well. There's just the packaging and throwing them out. I have tried a few of the ones that you can charge by USB. I just don't find they work as well. I just haven't found the perfect ones. So for now, the disposable ones we'll use.
Yes, same. Yeah, I find the chargeable ones. One, you know, it's nice that the disposable ones flex, and the charging ones tend to not flex as much, and they're heavier, and that's kind of a bummer, bulkier and heavier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about composition. So, you know, when I'm photographing wildlife, I find that I'm just focused on trying to get our eyes in focus, and I tend to lose sight of any sort of compositional techniques. And that's because I'm just so inexperienced when it comes to photographing wildlife. So what are you thinking about besides capturing their personality and really connecting with them? Are there things that you're thinking about compositionally that would make a stronger photograph than just a sharp image of an animal?
Yeah, I guess mostly I'm thinking about the eyes. So that's what I focus on as well first. So I'm always trying to get the eyes in focus. That's my number one. But then I guess I'm trying to think about what I want to show in the image, like what I want to show the viewer from what I'm observing. So often I'm thinking, okay, do I want to be, you know, using a telephoto lens and zooming in quite close to the animal to get that maybe just the face portrait or just the body of the animal without showing any of the background? Or I'm often thinking, or do I want to show the landscape as well in the image? So that's something that I go back and forth with a lot of the time when I'm photographing wildlife. And if I do have the opportunity, say the animal is staying around for a bit longer, I'll try and shoot both. So I always try to maybe include more of the landscape and then get those kind of tight compositions as well of the animal. And I think it's important just from like I really do like those images of just the animal, just seeing the details of their fur, you know, the details in their face and their eyes and everything. I think those are really beautiful and I like taking those, but I also really like taking environmental photos because I think it's important for people to see also, you know, the environment in which the animals are living, just like where they're living, just it provides a little bit more context, I think, when looking at the image. They're not as, you know, popular on like social media and things like that. I think a lot of the time it's just those close up. But I still post a lot of landscape images where the animal's small in frame because I really like those. I just think, as a photographer, I'm quite a, I suppose, like a natural photographer. I like just capturing the scene as I see it. And I just think it's beautiful as is. I don't change too much. And I like showing the animal, in its home. It gets people maybe thinking a little bit more about, you know, the environment, what kind of issues maybe the animals are facing in those types of settings, that kind of thing. So yeah, I'd say that's maybe what I'm thinking about in composition. And another tip would be that I'm thinking about too is trying to get down. I always try and get down if I can, to either eye level or below or, lower than the animal. I find that really brings the viewer more into the image. You just feel a little bit more connected to the animal that way versus, you know, standing above the animal, sort of shooting down. There's always different situations where you might want to change your position. But for me, I'm always like on the ground, like in the snow, in the dirt, kind of laying on my stomach or, you know, kneeling down at the very least to try and get more of that intimate shot. So those are a couple of things thinking about.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So with all the time that you've spent in the Canadian Rockies and all the different types of wildlife that you've photographed there, which animal or bird would you say is the most challenging to photograph and why?
So I would say wolves. I'd say that's the animal that I'm most often looking for. That's the animal that I love photographing the most are wolves, gray wolves. But I'd also say that the most challenging. And that's just because they're really hard to find. They generally want to stay away from people, which is a good thing. So it just makes it more challenging to even find them. And then they're an animal that generally, if they see you, they'll usually take off. Like they don't, there's been a couple of times, I shouldn't say that, where they've stayed around, but that's when, you know, you're further back and maybe they don't notice you as much if you're really sitting still, they're able to stay around. But if you say make a loud noise or, you know, they're threatened in any way, they're gone, really quickly. So that can be challenging as well, but it's also the most fulfilling. Like that's what I love about it so much is it's not like you're guaranteed to see them. If I, you know, head out to the mountains or different areas, yeah, I see them maybe a handful of times a year, right? So that makes it more exciting. It's more of a challenge, but also really, really exciting and fulfilling when you do have those encounters.
Yeah, for sure. So when you go out, do you usually go out thinking like, well, today or this week or however long you're spending in the field, you know, you're looking for wolves or you're looking for coyotes or lynx or moose or whatever it is? Or do you go out and you're just like, I have this much time that I can spend in the field and whatever I see. And then how do you know when to keep moving and keep exploring versus sort of just to stay put in one area and just wait for the animals to come to you?
Yeah, so I would say it's a mix of both. So I probably do both. Some days I will just, you know, head out. I'll just pick a place. I'll head out, start exploring with a goal in mind. You know, generally I do know the wildlife in each area. So I know the selection of wild animals that I will potentially be able to come across, but I'm not specifically looking for something, a specific animal. I'm just more out to explore and explore the beauty and see what I can find. So sometimes that's what I'll do. And maybe in those instances, I'm not just staying in one area. I'm kind of exploring different areas as I go and looking for things. And then other times I'll go out with a specific animal in mind. So, you know, sometimes I will focus on trying to find wolves because it does take so much time. So I'll, you know, set a few days or a few weeks where I'll just specifically look for wolves that way, or like lynx. So in the winter is when I usually try and find Canada lynx. And especially the past couple of years, that's really been a goal of mine. And then I will just dedicate a lot of my time to exploring the same areas where I know that the lynx are. I usually do that in the winter just because it's a little little bit easier. You're able to track them in the snow, on snowshoes, which really helps that way. So there's certain times of the year where maybe I'll focus on a specific animal rather than just heading out generally. And then, yeah, I'll stay in that area. Sometimes I'll sit if I know, say if I've seen, using that lynx example, say if I've seen a lot of their tracks kind of crisscrossing a certain meadow, then maybe I'll sit in that meadow for, you know, a whole day or half a day or whatever and just wait. Other times, you know, I will follow the tracks a little bit. But yeah, it's just sort of about getting out as much as possible into the areas and just noticing those signs of where the animals are moving, you know, what maybe areas where they're bedded down. And so you kind of figure that out first. And then next time you head in, you kind of sit maybe in one area and sort of wait. So yeah, it's generally, I do a bit of both, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Like I said earlier, I live in Vermont and I've never seen a wild cat here. And I know we have bobcats at least, but I've never had the opportunity to actually photograph one, but I see their tracks all the time. And so anytime I'm going out hiking, there's this one trail in particular that is just like a highway of tracks and tracks and tracks. And I feel like I'm making so much noise just in hiking, that there's no way I'll actually ever see them, but, maybe I just need to stay put for the day and see what happens.
Yeah, just go back and try and, yeah, figure out where those tracks are going. Maybe they're always staying in a certain area, right? Everything has a certain territory. So yeah, I would go back and just keep looking for those tracks and then, yeah, maybe just hunker down for the day or a couple days and hope for the best.
Yeah, I love your lynx photographs. You have one in particular that's coming to mind is of a mother and a kitten. Yeah. Maybe you can tell us about that story, about photographing them.
Sure. Yeah. So that was actually my first time seeing a lynx, which is, I still think back to that encounter because I just think it was so lucky. Like, and you know, that's a lot of it too, is a lot of it is preparation, you know, learning about the animal, learning about locations, and then getting out. So, you know, trying to put yourself in those situations where you might run into wildlife, but then you do have those lucky encounters as well because of you've had that preparation. But so that was, yeah, just a really special day. And so I was actually out with my mom. We had been staying out for the night in sort of like a cabin type area. We were just planning on snowshoeing, and we ended up going into this sort of area where I knew you could potentially see lynx. I'd heard in the past that this was sort of an area where they tended to hang out, and I'd seen tracks and things like that in the past, but just never had seen the animal itself. So we were just spending the day snowshoeing, and we were kind of snowshoeing into this meadow, and I happened to look up, and there was like a tiny speck in the distance, the opposite end of the meadow. This animal was sort of moving through really slowly, and it was sort of like a light brown kind of color, light brown gray. And at first I thought it was a coyote. And so I was, you know, excited, of course. I always like seeing coyotes as well. But I just was like, oh, mom, like there's a coyote. But then I was looking closely. I'm like, that doesn't look like it's moving like a coyote. Like lynx have a certain way that they move through the snow and they move on top of the snow because their paws are so massive and covered in fur. So they act like snowshoes. So it was walking really slow. And then I see another little animal come out behind the first one's little kitten. So I just remember like looking over at my mom and being like, there's two lynx with and a kitten on top of that. So we were super, super excited. So we just ended up, they ended up circling around us, not really looking at us. Like I knew that they knew that we were there, but they actually came like quite a bit close to us and then sort of disappeared into the woods. So we just ended up following their tracks for a little bit. And then I ended up coming up over this sort of small mound, and there was another little tiny little meadow. And they were laying right in the center of this meadow. And so my mom and I just kind of sank down into the snow, stayed completely still. We were pretty far away from them still. So I was just using a telephoto lens. But yeah, they just ended up staying there for about, I don't know, I'd say half an hour, 40 minutes, just laying there. They, oh, it's so amazing. Like it was just the most perfect setting. Like light snow was lightly falling. It's just my mom and I who, you know, we've always had this connection together being in the outdoors and with photography, and it's just amazing. And then the animals were just so calm. And so the mom and the kitten at first were both like napping sort of. Then the kitten woke up and then they started grooming each other. So the mom was like grooming the kitten. It was just such a special moment, and just seeing the interaction between the, you know, the mother and the kitten was just amazing. And then, so we watched them for a while, just kind of sitting there. And then eventually the mom just stood up, kind of stretched off and then disappeared, you know, just like slowly walked away, disappeared into the forest. And the kitten ended up staying there for a little bit. So we just had just us and the kitten for a little while. And then she just stood up and followed the mom. And it was just perfect. And we just looked at each other and we were like, that's enough. Like, you know, you have those moments where, you know, we probably could have just tracked them again and got more shots, but I just thought it was just the most special moment. And so we just, oh, and I just left and went on our snowshoe and then went back out to the car. And yeah, it was just amazing. It's probably one of my top five wildlife moments for sure. And just seeing them, like, they're just so incredibly beautiful and very calm. Like, I hadn't seen one before, so I wasn't sure quite, you know, their demeanor, but every time I've seen them since, I've seen them maybe three or four times since. And the same thing, they're just a very calm and cool animal. And they just don't seem too bothered by you as long as you're being, you know, respectful. So yeah, it's just amazing.
Yeah. It sounds magical. Yeah. And to see them relax so much and just be in their element, it must have been just fantastic.
Yeah, it was amazing. And my only regret with that was we were being so sweet. I just didn't want to spook them at all or change anything. So we just, my mom and I, again, just sat there. So I was only using the lens that I had out, which is a 500 millimeter lens. So it's quite a big telephoto lens. And I wish that I might have had a chance to switch lenses and get more of that environmental portrait, like get more of the small, tiny meadow and more of the forest, because we were kind of deep within the forest. That's my only regret, but I'm really happy with the photos. Obviously, I loved it, but I just didn't want to make a movement to switch the lens or make any noise. So I just stuck with that one lens. But sometimes that's what you have to do, is just kind of work with what equipment you have or what lens you have on and make it work. So,
right.
Yeah, but it was magical for sure.
Yeah, that's so cool. So have you ever observed anything like super unusual or unexpected in terms of wildlife behavior?
Yeah, I guess unexpected. Yeah, a few times I'd say, like, oh, I've seen a lot of really amazing animal behavior or interactions. Something unexpected, I guess the thing that comes to mind is I photographed a wolf pack that had an elk kill kind of deep in the woods, and they were moving in and out of the woods again to the kill. Then they'd go off to a different area of the forest to rest. And I didn't ever go in to the kill when the wolves were on it. I wouldn't do that. It's just, that's more maybe a dangerous situation. Not necessarily they would never attack you or anything like that, but I just never wanted to put pressure on them or make them leave the kill and leave that meal. So I didn't go in. I would just sort of photograph them as they came and went from this one spot in the woods. But the interesting part after was that once the wolves had left the area for good, they'd finished with the meal and they'd gone to a different area. I did go in to look. I wanted to make sure what they were eating, and I like that kind of thing, just seeing what they were feeding on and, you know, just observing the kill site and all that. And at the same time, a coyote kind of came in with me at the same exact time and would feed on the carcass. So that, I just find that's like such an interesting thing to think about, is, you know, not only when, like, say a wolf pack or a bear or something takes down an animal, there's all these other animals within the ecosystem that also feed on the remains of the carcass. So they'll feed on, you know, the little bits of meat, the bones, like all these birds came in as well. So we have a lot of magpies and ravens that came in to feed on the carcass. So that was a really cool interaction, just to see the bigger role that these animals play, like predators play, right? They provide food for a lot of other different animals in the forest. So I'd say that was a pretty neat interaction, just seeing after the fact, seeing this coyote come in and feed on that, seeing all the birds arrive. I've seen a lot of really cool interactions between ravens and other animals. So I've seen, when I've seen wolf kills in front of me and in person, say if I'm in a car or something, that's been the time when I've been able to get kind of close to a wolf kill without myself being out of present with the kill, but I've photographed it that way. And I've seen a lot of like ravens fly in and try and steal pieces of the kill from the wolves. And just that interaction between the birds and the wolves themselves is really interesting and unique. The wolves generally, they don't seem to be, you know, wanting to attack the ravens necessarily. They're just kind of like it's like an annoying little brother or little sister or something trying to get something from you, you know?
Again.
And you're, and you're just chasing them away for a moment and then going back to what you're doing. And then I'm always amazed at the like bravery or like cheekiness of the ravens and magpies, like how close they'll get. And sometimes they'll, you know, like try and take a little, like with their beak or bill, they'll try and like bite into the fur of the wolf, of the bear, like trying to get them off the kill. I've seen that a couple of times. I just think it's amazing. You know, these birds are so brave to be able to do that, but it works because then they ended up getting, you know, some of that meal. So just right. things like that. I can't really think of anything else, but just the, always just the interactions between different species or how they kind of interact with one another, I think is always really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're like their little subcultures that they have between them, you know, these little dynamics that happen. And yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So for people who are not familiar, can you talk a little bit more about the important role of predators and what they play in the whole ecosystem and how these killing contests of predators that go on, how damaging they are to a biodiversity of a region?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So that's something I'm really passionate about is those. Yeah, we have a lot of those killing contests like here in Alberta as well. So specifically for coyotes, there's, you know, killing contests of coyotes, which I just don't agree with as well. So a lot of the time, you know, when people are going out, yeah, the goal of these contests is just to kill as many of that animal as possible. So whether it's wolves or coyotes or bobcats or whatever. So they're just killing as many as possible. And for no real reason, right? It's just for sport. It's not like they're not consuming the animals. It's ridiculous. And I just can't believe that we allow them to continue, to be honest. But so what it does is you're eliminating, you know, the top level of the ecosystem, basically. And then what that does is, say for coyotes, for example, people think they're a nuisance. So they think removing them from the landscape, it is doing, you know, everyone a favor. But what happens is then for like rodent populations, you know, sometimes get out of control. If you're removing those predators, then you're getting an overabundance of, yeah, rodents in an area, which can lead to disease, things like that. So they play a really important and vital role in the ecosystem, kind of regulating prey, regulating like rodents, things like that. And when you remove them, yeah, it just causes a major shift in the environment. And there's a really good study. I don't know if you probably have heard of it, about wolves and like the role that they play in the ecosystem. And when they did some studies in Yellowstone about the impact of the removal of the wolves, and just how like the elk populations, you know, grew, they started eating too much of the grasses, reducing those down. There was like a lot of soil erosion, that kind of thing that happens. So there's all of these links that happen, you know, once you remove those predators from the ecosystem, all of these things happen and that aren't good. And so once they reintroduced the wolves into Yellowstone, for example, they showed that, you know, then they started chasing the elks. The elk were moving to different areas again and distributing. They weren't just foraging in one particular area and they were able to forage in all these different areas. So the grasses came back, the erosion stopped, like all of these different things happened because of the predators being reintroduced. So they are, yeah, incredibly important. And often too, say with wolves, they will, you know, chase like a herd of ungulates, but they'll go generally for the ones that are sicker or older. They sort of target those animals and remove them from the population. So they're actually improving the health of the herd as a whole. Whereas in those contests, you know, they're removing all sorts of animals. They can be removing, you know, the dominant animals from a pack, for example, or a family, which has really detrimental effects as well. Because say if you're targeting wolves, for example, and you take out the dominant wolves, all the rest of the wolves in the family, they just, you know, will disperse, maybe get into issues. Like they'll maybe start hunting like cattle or something like that. Like they're kind of left on their own. Whereas with the dominant pair, they kind of learn how to hunt as a pack properly. And they don't get into as many issues. So there's just things like that can happen when you're removing, you know, animals at random through these contests and things like that.
Yeah, that's so interesting about the dominant pair and how it can make the pack healthier from a hunting standpoint too, in that they're less likely to meddle in human activities and be more wild, and that's what we should be honoring them for, is like, exactly. Let them do what they do best, you know, and then we can live more in harmony with them.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They'll learn, you know, they learn from, it's sort of like a wolf family is a lot like our families where, you know, they learn from the dominant wolves, the parents. They got taught that way. And if those individuals are removed, then they're not taught properly to how to behave and they might get into more issues. And it's not always the case, but it can happen for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. So what ways have you been using your photography to raise awareness around these types of animal conservation issues?
Yeah. So I try, say on social media, things like that on Instagram. I don't always do, I've gotten maybe a little bit more lazy in this respect with social media. I found it was taking over quite a bit of my time and I chose to spend less time on there. But when I do, I try and post my photos and often I'll include maybe a description of how the photo was taken, like my experience more so with the animal, not like the technical aspects of how it was taken, but just more about the story to kind of get people engaged. Or I'll share, I often like to share some fact about the animal. So people are learning a bit. They're not just scrolling and seeing, you know, maybe a nice image. They're kind of learning something about the animal and hopefully that will spark some interest. And then when I see issues happening in terms of wildlife conservation, I'll also share those on social media and try and get people to, you know, take action, whether that's contacting like government officials or signing petitions, things like that. I try and stay on top of, issues that matter to me, especially here at locally, like in British Columbia and Alberta, are really special to me. So I try and raise awareness about those. And then I also will donate images to several nonprofits. So I work with several nonprofits and just will donate my images for them to use in their marketing, which helps them. They don't, you know, often those kind of organizations, they don't have the funds to be paying a ton for photography and it just helps them out and be able to focus on the work, the really important work that they do, which is the conservation side versus the photography side. So I try and work with nonprofits that way. And then for a couple nonprofits, Exposed is one of them that I work with. I do some research for them. So I'll research, you know, wildlife conservation issues and provide them with the data, or sometimes I'll write articles and things like that for them as well. So just trying to select, you know, there's so many out there. So I think for people, sometimes it can seem a bit overwhelming or what to do with your photos, but I think just choose a few that are really close to your heart and just donate some images or ask how you can help in other ways. Maybe there is, if you're great at writing as well or research, with your photography, sometimes that can help as well. Then you're giving them, you know, a full article with your photos that can help them and they can put on their site. So just things like that. Yeah.
Those are great ideas. Thank you. And what ways do you think the photography community can help encourage younger people to become more interested in wildlife and nature photography, especially girls? You know, I feel like girls and women tend to be underrepresented in those fields. So what ways do you think we can involve more young people?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think that's really, really important. I think they're, you know, they're the next generation coming up and you want to get them interested at a young age so that they continue kind of focusing on the importance of wildlife and wildlife conservation. One way you could do it, I was thinking, like I do teach right now, and I do teach for young kids specifically. It's not about wildlife. Yeah, I teach for Canon Canada, these online classes, and it's not wildlife based specifically, but it's just about photography. But as I teach, I try and get them thinking. I give examples from my own work, or, you know, I talk about wildlife, I talk about conservation as I'm teaching them about photography. So just getting them interested, at a young age, getting them to, you know, learn about photography, learn about using their cameras, and then gearing them more towards like, how can you do that in a way, that you could promote conservation or get people to care about what you're photographing? Getting their interest sparked, or teaching at, you know, giving sessions at schools is another really good thing to get people and kids interested in wildlife conservation or wildlife generally, is just, you know, going in, showing some photos, speaking about some experiences that you have and getting them sort of excited about that and then thinking about that in the future. And then also, I know a lot of people will have, you know, mentors or mentees, right? You'd have maybe someone that's kind of coming up in photography. Maybe they'll just, you know, reach out and you can just give them some guidance or help them in some way. I think that's a really powerful thing as well. Like, I was lucky I had a mentor too, starting out. And it's just that relationship is so important. And just to have someone that you can go to with some questions or assistance. So if you have a young person that's interested in wildlife photography specifically, maybe partnering with them for a certain amount of time and kind of helping them out if you can, whether that's just, you know, maybe a couple emails back and forth or on the phone or getting out together if you're in the same area and just shooting for a day. I think that has such an impact on kids and it's really important for them to see someone else doing it as well, right, in the field. And then they start to think that they can do it that's a future that maybe they want to pursue. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm always blown away when I see the work of you know, young kids or teenagers. I mean, it's incredible what they can create, you know?
And oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just amazing. And
yeah,
a friend of mine, he has two young daughters and they are just killing it with their bird photography. They're really into birds right now. And he sent me a whole bunch of their photos recently. And I was like, I could never do that. Like what they're able to do. I was like, wow, this is incredible. And like, and they're, you know, they have tiny hands to hold such big equipment and be able to use it is just so impressive, you know? And so I feel like if we just give them the chance and the opportunity and the tools, like it's so inspiring.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know. I feel the same. Like every time I see, you know, even on social media, you're scrolling through and you're like, oh, my. And you look at the person's age and in their bio, it's like 14-year-old from wherever. You're right. Like, I won't even be able to get that photo in my lifetime. And you're 14. Right. It's incredible. It's amazing. And I like what you said. Yeah, I think it's just about giving them that chance and the opportunity. And your friend's example is such a good one. Like just even getting kids out into your own backyard and photographing like birds is such a great way to start, because generally wherever you live, there is some type of bird life right around you, and they're an excellent subject. They're a really challenging subject to photograph too. So being able to photograph them well, is a great way to learn about photography and learn about your gear. But then you're also getting to see, you know, an animal close up, getting to see some behavior. And I think just, then kids are realizing, oh, like, you know, if this is in my backyard, like what else is there to explore and to see? And it just kind of sparks that creativity and that passion at a young age.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we wrap things up, are you up for doing a lightning round?
For sure. Yep.
All right.
No pressure.
It's
no
always
pressure.
Fun. No, right. Exactly. So what is your favorite subject to photograph?
Yeah. So definitely I'd say gray wolves. Wolves for me are my favorite for sure. Yeah. I think they're just really misunderstood. And I just love being able to tell the stories of like the behaviors that I see. You know, not only are they beautiful animals, but they're just so intelligent. They're so family oriented. They're so playful, like all these just different sides that people don't see. I love. Yeah. So I love to see that for myself, but I also really like to share that with other people.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's one piece of gear that you can't live without that's not camera, your cameras, lenses or tripod?
That's a good question. I think, maybe I already mentioned this earlier, but I would say my InReach device. You know, I'll just have that with me wherever. And I think it's so important. Just, you know, you always think nothing will happen to you when you're out, but there's just that slight chance, you know, you just never know what's going to happen, and just always be prepared and get that help. So that's something that I'll never leave home without. I always have that with me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's excellent. Yeah. Where would you most love to photograph if you could go anywhere in the world?
Ooh, it's another tough one. You know, it's funny. Like I've been lucky to travel to lots of different places to do wildlife photography. I'm lucky that way. And every place that I go, I fall in love, and it's beautiful. And I just love all of the animals as well. But I'd say, you know, I love photographing around home. Like I love living close to the Rockies, and that's probably where I would want to photograph for the rest of my life if I had to pick one place. Or in British Columbia too, there's a place. Have you been to the Great Bear Rainforest? Or that?
I haven't.
I don't know if you've ever been up to BC, or if you ever have the chance, like you'd love it.
I would love to go. Yeah, I've been to the Yukon, and I've driven through
the Yukon. Okay.
You know, just a tip of BC to get to Alaska from the Yukon.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just basically shaved off a little piece of it to go through. But awesome. I would love to spend more time there.
Oh yeah. It's just stunning. It's just, it's the Great Barrier Rainforest is probably my favorite place, out of anywhere to photograph. It's just so peaceful. A lot of the places that you go to, you don't have any cell service. So you're just completely disconnected. So it's amazing, and just amazing wildlife that you can find in there as well, from, you know, grizzly bears, black bears, coastal wolves, that kind of thing. So I'd say close to home is just, I'm just lucky to sort of live in this area, I think. And I grew up in it so much, and I really I love it. But the Arctic is a place that I haven't been yet that I'd really like to explore too. So Northern Canada and the Arctic, I'd love to go up there and photograph polar bears and maybe Arctic wolves or Arctic foxes or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's another area, but generally I'd say local for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's great that you live where you'd love to live. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? I'm reading a book. Oh, I'm going to forget his name. I'm reading a book. It's about it's random. It's not wildlife related, but it's travels through Japan. This man back in 2006, like hitchhiked through Japan. I just can't think of the author's name. It's going to bother me. He's a Canadian author. Will Ferguson. Yeah. Will Ferguson is his name. I think it's called Hitchhiking Through Japan, but Japan is a place that I adore. I've been there twice. My brother lived there, for years. And so I traveled there with my dad a long time ago. And then I went recently with my husband and I love that country so much. So I just found that book I had it on my bookshelf for a long time. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to start reading it. And it just brings back all these memories of what it's like to be over there. So
yeah,
it's a good one.
Oh, that's great. All right. Well, final question. What does connecting with nature mean to you?
Yeah. So I'd say connecting to nature to me is about, you know, for me, it's about being present. I feel like it's the only time, you know, in my life where I just feel completely at ease, completely like myself. Like I find that being out in nature, you know, you're not focused on anything else. A lot of the time, you know, I'll forget about what's happening, you know, at work or in my daily life, that kind of thing. And I'm just more focused on what's happening. You kind of have to be more present and focused on what's happening in front of you, especially if you're photographing wildlife. It just puts you in the moment, which I find is really hard to do nowadays. Like if, you know, we're usually on our phones or we're always connected somehow, but being out in nature, being out in the wilderness and like photographing an animal to me just puts you in that moment. It's so peaceful. There's no distractions. There's nothing else to think about except what's happening in front of you. And I just love it. Like noticing, you know, the small details in nature, being alone, like having that kind of solitude and peaceful. Like I really do. Like obviously I love my husband. I love my family, but I really do enjoy that time alone and getting that. And yeah, just I find like being out in nature, just you recognize the beauty of everything around you. And I think it's so important. I think everyone should, you know, hopefully if you have the chance to just get out a little bit, whether that's, you know, local park or into, you know, national park, provincial park, and just kind of soak it in. Don't just, like stay close to the roads, like try and get out as much as you can, you know, into the real nature and real wilderness and just take a few moments. And I think it just makes people appreciate it so much more and just gives us that break, right? From the daily life. So it's really important to me.
Yes.
Same with you, I imagine.
But, same. Yep. I totally relate to that. Well, Colleen, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and share with us your stories about wildlife and your journey in photography and all of that. If people wanted to connect with you or find out more about your work or any sort of upcoming workshops that you have, what's the best way for them to find you?
Yes, the best way probably is through Instagram. So I'm most active on there. Like I said, I take a little breaks now and again, but I'm mostly active on there. So my handle is just Colleen Guerra Photo on Instagram. I also have a website, so Colleen Guerra Photography. So I can also be contacted on there just through email. So those are probably the two best ways. So I'd say through Instagram or via my website.
Okay, perfect. And I'll put those links in the show notes for sure. Well, thank you again. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks so much, Brenda. Thanks for having me on. It's been great.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Colleen. And again, you can find out more about her wildlife photography and upcoming workshops on our website at ColleenGuerraPhotography.com. And I highly recommend you follow her on Instagram to see more of her amazing wildlife images and stories about the animals. Again, thank you, Colleen, for coming on the show. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. I appreciate you. And I hope you got a lot of value out of today's episode. You can find the links to all the information we talked about today in the show notes at outdoorphotographypodcast.com/75. And just a heads up, I'm in the process of updating and improving my Compose with Clarity virtual workshop. So if you're interested in learning about composition in a way that doesn't involve rules or breaking them, then listen out for future announcements about that. And if you want to learn more, just go to composewithclarity.com. And if you sign up for the Outdoor Photography School newsletter, you'll be the first to know when it will be offered. And last but not least, I'll be back here next week with a Tidbit Tuesday episode where I'll share a practical photography or outdoor tip and or answer your submitted questions. So if you have a question or a topic you'd like to suggest for a future Tidbit Tuesday, you can record your message or contact me at outdoorphotographypodcast.com. And until then, get outside, my friends, and find yourself a little nature. Take care.